We're going to do a tiny bit different thing because I'm going to be sharing some stuff about walking meditation. And it seems absurd to do that and not do some walking meditation, if you know what I mean. So I was thinking what we'll do is sit for like 30 minutes and walk for 10 in this period. And how many people have done walking meditation? Okay. Well, I'll just say a few words and then I'm going to say more later. But it's kind of like breath meditation, insofar as breath is primary, sort of the place we keep defaulting to. Other things may appear and then they're predominant. But with walking, feet are primary. The sensation of our walking, the feet landing on the ground, and that's primary. And if other things arise, they may, like thoughts, they may be predominant for a while, but we just kind of come back to the feet. So it's a very, and the breath, sometimes you just kind of forget about it, and it's really feet, feet, feet. So we'll do that for about 10 minutes. And when you get up to walk, y'all here in the room, we have seven people in the room. No, we have five. You know, try to go crosswise or some way you won't collide in each other. It's not that hard with this few number of people. And other than that, same thing for sitting, which we're about to do first, is, you know, primary is breath. Predominance, whatever arises. But the point is to be mindful moment by moment, to watch the arising and passing of things, to recognize the impermanence of things, the not-self of things. These all inherently arise. That's sort of the why we're doing it, because this is a path of insight, of liberation. So I'm honored that you're all here, and I'm happy that you're here. It's so funny. He's so used to listening to the Ajahn. I have to feel this, oh my God, how can I compare to the Ajahn? Not that I'm trying to compare, but it's sort of a funny thought. I'll confess that I have that thought arising. So I haven't gotten that out of my system. We'll go ahead. I'm going to pause the recording. So walking meditation. Yes, sir. I did. Thank you. Yep. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that whenever you know folks realize that I'm missing something. That's always handy. Yeah, but walking meditation, you know, it's such a beautiful thing. It's this, I had a feeling that maybe not so many people would come because people don't realize how amazing it is. So they go, oh, walking meditation, forget that. But it's really amazing because it's always available. And, you know, the whole thing about the first foundation of mindfulness is that our body is this grounding place. It's a safe harbor. It's a place where we can place our attention in mindfulness practice, no matter what's going on in terms of our thinking or in terms of outer conditions. The body's always there. So it's just so handy. And we emphasize sitting meditation and the breath for good reason. It's incredibly wonderful. And these are available. And you know, on a cushion or on a chair, we can use our breath, be present with all that. So that's great. But that's only whatever we do, an hour a day, you know, whatever our time is. What about the rest of the time? And that's why we're walking meditation and the related aspects can be really, really handy because it fits into daily activities. And it can be a lot more fruitful than I think people often think. I mean, a lot of people don't do walking meditation on their own so much, and they sort of think it's second tier or something, but it's not. It's really about being present. And in fact, Joseph Goldstein once said that his greatest insights have happened not while sitting, but during walking. I've had that experience myself. It's like things fall into an openness. And even if you've been sitting 90% of the time and walking 10, that's often when big breakthroughs happen for people. So it's really, really useful. So let's go back to Satipatthana, number 10 in the Middle Length Discourses. That's the place where the Buddha taught us how to meditate in more than any one single place. And it's interesting that how important body is. There's 13 refrains, and out of those, 6 have to do with body. So right there, that emphasizes the importance of body. And 3 of those 6, arguably in different ways, have to do or could touch on walking meditation. So it kind of, because the first is very much about breath, but the rest, the other 5 body ones are different aspects But three of those could be said to reference what walking meditation is. So these three are the four postures and full awareness of bodily actions. So that's second, third is that, and then to a lesser degree, awareness of body parts. And to be sure, that's this whole bunch of viscera and everything, but, you know, our legs and feet are included. And the four postures, by the way, are sitting, walking, standing, and lying down. So that covers the gamut, and one of those is walking. So the Buddha, you know, when we really look at what he's saying, he's really asking us to bring mindfulness to those, all that, the entire array. That's what's so beautiful about the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, is the entire array of our experience. But in terms of this, he's talking about walking. He's talking about any activity of our body, and he's talking about any of our body parts, to be mindful of all of those. So it's really worth kind of bringing that into our practice and how we relate to our practice, because we can get a little like sitting focused, you know, too sitting focused, and sort of forget how relevant that is. And if you look at a monastic setting, and some of you have just been, well, I'm sure in Ajahn Brahm's place, right? There's kutis and there's walking paths at each kuti, right? Yep. And that's how it is in Thailand. And I don't know, I've been in, it's kind of like, it's almost kind of sweet, because you'll see this kuti and the walking path is like worn down, you know, below the ground from people walking back and forth and back and forth for years and years and years. So it's a real, you can really feel the depth of that and how important that is in monastic life. So you could say that sitting and walking are kind of subsets of this whole wider arena, area of being mindful of body. And this leads to insight. And in the refrain, the refrain about body in the sutta, the Buddha said, in this way, one abides contemplating the body as a body internally, externally, and both internally and externally. And one abides independent, not clinging to anything in the world. So that's this amazing little simple little phrase that articulates what awakening is: independent, not clinging to anything in the world. And this mindfulness of body is part of what gets us there, and mindfulness of walking. So it's true, like I was just saying, that all four postures and all bodily actions are fruitful, but walking meditation is special because, for one thing, walking is something we do often. We do it a lot, and it has a capacity to really take us into absorption in a way that other physical activities don't so much. Which is why we tend to focus on sitting practice, because that can take us into absorption and really settledness, but walking can also. But, you know, the other things, like, you know, we learn if we reach for a cup in our kitchen cabinet to try to be mindful of that, to feel the motion, to feel the contact, but you sort of can't, your dog would really go nuts if you sat there for half an hour putting the cup back and forth and back and forth, you know, or your spouse, like, they just think you're losing it. So those other aspects, they don't work so well for protracted practice. They have these little momentary moments, which are great. You know, you reach for the doorknob to have that be a place where you're cultivating mindfulness, but you can't stand outside the house and reach for the doorknob for half an hour because somebody will be calling the gendarmes. So walking meditation is special because we have a way to really work with it more deeply, to get into absorption. And also, so there's several things about walking meditation that are really sort of profound and useful. For one thing, it's the largest physical part of our bodies, our hips, our feet, our legs. So if we're working to be mindful of that, there's a lot to be mindful of. It's easier to place our attention there. If we're trying to be mindful of our elbow, that's hard to do because you can hardly feel it and nothing much is going on. Or if you wiggle your finger and try to be mindful of that, it's not so much. But if we're walking, there's a lot there, and it's easier to not be distracted. There's something to place our minds on. So that part is really helpful. And part of what's almost like amusing about walking practice is when we start to experience this significant parts of our body that most of us have no clue about. I mean, your average human walks around for 70 years and then dies, and they've never actually felt their feet. You know, they just never got around to it. They never even tried. They just trundled along. So to do that experience of really feeling your feet and feeling how the bones in your feet move and all that, it's pretty, it's almost kind of funny, but it's also really powerful, because we can, there's a lot there to experience, a lot there to work with. And also, walking has, like the breath, an inherently repetitive aspect without any beguiling content. That's the two good things about the breath. It's not like thoughts. There's a lot of thoughts, but they're totally beguiling, and they take us off into a pancha, and we get lost and try to come back. The breath doesn't do that. There's nothing to get lost in. And walking's like that too. It's repetitive, step by step by step, but it's not. We're not going to get lost in it, so it's easier to be mindful of it. So in that way, it's also really, really helpful. And, you know, we can walk steadily in terms of this repeating aspect. We can go back and forth. We just did it for 10 minutes. You know, we can walk steadily for 30 minutes back and forth in a place, or going for a walk is a little more problematic because we tend to be exposed to stimulus, and we have to steer and miss people and not get crushed going across streets. But aside from that, in either case, it's really helpful. So this is really a tool we can really, really work with it to develop absorption. And, you know, it's something we do all the time through the course of a day. So to really take it, decide to take it, seize it as a practice, and to discipline ourselves that way can be very useful. We walk to the store, we walk the dog, we walk to the bus, all these different things. See something that works for you. You know, try it out. See what you can bring into your life as an opportunity to practice. Because we can turn that little trip into a important thing. And I've said this before, but just because of my own experience, I used to be a journalist, right? And I've said that before. And so I was, you know, hammered on deadlines and walking from my work area to the bathroom and back down the hall. You know, I just really just found that more and more just to be an incredible place to practice. And I would just drop it and just feel my feet, you know, just 20 steps down the hall, use the bathroom, 20 steps back, even if I was like 12 minutes off deadline or whatever, but I had to go, you know. But there was really nothing to think about. Even if I just, as best I could drop it, came back, it was all there, what I had to do. But it was just punched a hole in the drivedness of it. So one way to think about this is walking in formal practice and walking in daily life, and how what you can choose there that'll be helpful. And like we were just talking about, that every kuti has a walking path in Thailand or Thai Forest Monastery or monasteries in the West, just because that's so important. And that's what, you know, that's what the monks do when they go back, you know, for their time of abiding. Even in a Jetavana monastery in India, there's a place where the Buddha's hut was, and there's a area where he used to go walking. It's, you know, it's a brick thing built up, but that's where he used to do walking practice. He had a hut, he did walking practice. Is that the wind creaking? That's so cool. We're having creaking wind here at the church for you all down in San Diego. So we're having wind in the northwest. But just to think of the Buddha, you know, it's like you read about these guys and they have the meal and then they do the day's abiding. It's like, wow. I mean, even the Buddha did the day's abiding. He was already awake and then he did the day's abiding, and that would be a combination of sitting and walking back and forth. So it's really moving to think of our potential, because if the Buddha, who was already awakened, was doing a day's abiding, and the monastics there all were, you know, they talk in the evening, but we can too. Yeah, I just find it really inspiring to see where walking paths have really been worn down. It's just something so wonderful about that, because you can just feel years of walking back and forth happening there. So in a formal retreat, you know, we encounter this kind of walking practice. Sometimes with a formal path and sometimes not, like Cloud Mountain. It's got some sort of a rock garden out in the front, and there's areas where you can set up to do walking practice and some trails up and back and all that kind of stuff. So there's plenty of places for walking. And in retreats, how many people have done long, you know, or a week retreat? Quite a few. Yeah. So, right. So there's a alternating periods of walking and sitting, and they very much complement each other. And really it's a way we can keep going, because most people can't sit for the entire day or walk for the entire day. So taking turns is very helpful to just maintain the continuity of practice for the day. So when we think about our non-formal practice, kind of bringing in some of that lesson is really helpful, and in terms of how we think about it, because it's, you know, it's just really equal to and complementary to sitting practice. But a lot of people, it doesn't occur to them to do walking practice at home. A lot of people just sort of don't think of it. So I want to encourage that. And you know, sitting is probably our kind of baseline, our sort of primary in terms of clocking and time, but to really open up that possibility of walking and use it skillfully, because there's times when it can really make a difference and get us move ahead from a stuckness place if we're just doing sitting. For instance, in my own experience, I found walking very helpful in two particular areas. One is dealing with the hindrances. And in my case, my favorite hindrances seem to be sloth and torpor and restlessness, which are kind of the opposite poles. And that's, you know, if you're trying to sit and sloth and torpor nails you, it's pretty hard. What are you going to do? And standing up and walking is a great thing to do. We're blessed to have a sort of guest room, meditation room in our house, but since we've had no guests, it's just a meditation room. And it's long enough to do, you know, walking. I do retreat in our little Arpod trailer, which has exactly 6 feet. And you can do walking and meditation in 6 feet when it's raining outside. So inside, just finding that little place, close the door so the dogs are outside, whatever you got to do. But utilize it when sloth and torpor hits. It's super helpful, because you can just pull yourself up. Because what are your alternatives? You fall asleep, you give up, you know, all those things. And I'm tend to be a little, as I was saying, in the kitchen, I tend to be a little short of sleep, because my wonderful wife not so prone to go to bed early, and I need to get up early to practice. So between the two, I get kind of squeezed for sleep sometimes. So this can be really helpful to be able to just stand up and do practice. I almost do it almost every day. I do some walking practice, partly because of that, partly because of the sloth and torpor thing. And then the other side of it is restlessness. You know, it'd be interesting to see when we discuss for other people, but sometimes it's just really hard to sit still, you know, when stuff's just kicking up and whatever. But just to stand up and practice with that, it can be really helpful. And it's a place where our bodies can really ground us down in a way that breath can be not so helpful sometimes if we're restless and just our mind's careening around, or we sort of want to, you know, some part of us is seeking entertainment and you have to be present. Oh, okay, that's restless. Just be there with that. So very worthwhile to consider that, even for 10 or 15 minutes, and then sit down again. Really, really helps. Don't give up. That's the main thing. Don't give up. Get skillful. So that's the strongest. And the second area where it's helpful is just outside of, you know, outside of formal practice, because we spend all this time walking, and just shift our mind into being present while we're doing it. Just all the random areas of navigating the world, you know, walking to the bus, walking to the car, all that stuff. Just, oh yeah. Just remind ourselves just now. It's really, really, really useful, because, you know, it's like if you think of a great being like Achan Cha or some great being, and you saw them walking, you'd assume that they were that their awakenedness was manifesting in those moments. And if you realize they totally weren't, you'd feel disappointed, because that would be a, you know, a gap in what they were. So beings like that, that have really awakened, and inherently they're manifesting that all the time when they're doing the other stuff. So for us, it's a training and it's an opening, really, really worth cultivating as much as we can. Because the alternative is obliviousness. And, you know, with walking, since we're so conditioned to get somewhere, that's the thing to be mindful of, is the I'm trying to accomplish the goal, and to like drop that and just be in the present. Kind of like Marianne was saying, you know, just be in the present. She's walking back to her place, but she was in the present moment by moment and not so focused on getting anywhere. And it was, you know, again, that was super helpful during that high pressure work time. I sort of have a memory almost, because it can be, for anyone that's working, you know, it can just seem like you're in this seamless application from the beginning to the end of that time, and to be able to just chop holes in it. I remember a Zen friend of mine would talk about punching holes in the middle of that illusion of continuity, and I sort of took it in. It's been really helpful to think about that. And then one other place where this is helpful, I don't know about y'all, but I'm prone to not sleeping in the middle of the night sometimes. I pop up at 2 a.m. and that's the end of the story. So I've really been using walking meditation a lot then. Just get up and just do walking meditation in the living room for 20 minutes and then I fall back asleep usually. But it's a wonderful time to practice actually, because it's quieter, you know, there's not a lot of thoughts buzzing around and everything's settled down. It's kind of special. And I don't know about, you know, again, I'll be interested to hear, but at least for me, trying to do sitting meditation at 2 a.m, that didn't work so well. I feel, I don't know, but walking does. So it's worth checking out as a possibility. Hmm. And this is also good, you know, the falling asleep after eating phenomena, which some of us encounter. That's why they have siestas in a lot of countries. But that's why when we, you know, like we're doing a day long, we try to have a walking period, either a walking period or some discussion after lunch, but not sitting. So walking works better for people, because they won't nod out probably. Whereas you can see in the sitting, there's people, you know, falling over. So it's really worth it to just think about where you do it, how you use this wonderful tool. And in terms of some thoughts about how to do it, you know, the distinction between primary and predominant objects, I find that really useful in meditation, that in normal breathing, sitting practice, the primary object is the breath. But if something else comes up, like thinking or a pain in the knee, that can be the predominant object for a while. You can shift your attention and then go back to the primary. So you sort of fall back to the primary, but you're not grabbing on it. The real point is to be mindful with whatever is most present. And if pain in the knee is most present, then mindful there, then you go back to the primary, and you know that primary is there to return to, but it's not a striving or grasping kind of thing. And walking is the same thing. The primary object's the sensations of the feet. And that's where we return to. Breath kind of not, you know, it depends on the tradition, but mostly in this tradition, it's returning to the feet. And other stuff will come up. We can do the same thing, you know, have an obsessive thought, thinking, be mindful of that for a while, then go back to the feet. But it is, it's useful. And in terms of, you know, it's good to walk slow so you can really feel what's going on, but we can also use that at a normal pace so you can kind of see what works for you, you know, cop to the circumstances. It might seem odd if you're walking really slow in certain places, but to do whatever you need to do to just really feel your feet and drop into your feet. And noting can be useful. And if you're getting on the more formal end of things, in the Burmese practice especially, there's a lot of emphasis on noting. And in terms of walking meditation, probably a lot is, but they note, like it'd be with one foot is lifting, then moving, then placing, then shifting, and saying those little words, like those one way of cycle of four words like that. And that can be really helpful. So you might experiment with that, you know, notings from a typhoonist, there's not so much emphasis on that, but it can be a useful tool. So it's worth engaging with if it's helpful. And then one thing I find sort of amusing is that for any of us who tend to think a lot, walking meditation is helpful because it's the other end of our bodies. And it's sort of ridiculous, but there's something to that, that our brain is up here, and in a sense we think that we have an experience of we're up here thinking. It may be a bit more diffuse, the actuality, but nonetheless it does feel like that, and our feet are down there, and that 6 feet or 5 feet of separation can actually make it helpful to kind of step away, so to speak, from our brain activity. And that can be where a walking path, whether it's a physical outdoors thing or a walking place in your home, really helpful, because then it becomes clear we're serious about not going anywhere. You know, that's where, rather than going for a walk and being mindful, a walking back and forth and back and forth really helps cut through that, getting anywhere. Thich Nhat Hanh said, the miracle is not to walk on water, it is to walk on this earth with awareness. And John Kabat Zinn says, ultimately, walking is stillness in motion, flowing mindfulness. So, you know, there's a phrase sometimes, to sit like a mountain and to take the seat, kind of resonant of how the Buddha was, to really respect what he set, and have that same sense when walking, that, you know, kind of like the Buddha was, to really take the seat or the contact the earth with each step, to really take it into our hearts as the Buddha did. So hopefully this will be a part of what makes our practice move. Sit for a minute.